Hello, it's time for a brand new My Mate Bought a Toaster. Thank you so much for listening. I really, really appreciate it. Before we start the show, just a quick word, a fraction of a second, to let you know that this show is brought to you by our friends at Onto. They are the company who can allow you to subscribe to an electric car. Get rid of your petrol and your diesel. Stop burning old dinosaur bones and get yourself an electric car. It's an incredible deal that they offer. On.to. Go and check it out. It's amazing. You can get all sorts of different electric cars from Nissan Leafs to Renault Zoes, Teslas as well. And you pay them a monthly subscription and they pay for the insurance. They even pay for your fuel, which is very exciting. On.2, go and have a look at it. Anyway, episode time? Yeah, come on then.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family. Darren, Darren, Darren.
Hello, it's My Mate Bought a Toaster. This is the podcast that dives into my guest's Amazon purchase history. But I'm guessing you already knew that. Unless this is your first episode, in which case you're very welcome. And well done for choosing a cracker of an entry-level My Mate Bought a Toaster. Because joining me on the show today, he's an old friend of mine and one of the people who actually requested to come on the show. Please welcome the very, very funny, very magnificent, very handsome Clint Edwards. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've never introduced you like that, have I?
No.
Are you comfortable with that? Are you feeling? Do you want to take a break?
I don't know. It was such a glowing introduction. It started sounding suspiciously ironic toward the end.
So, Clint, you've given me some access to your Amazon account. So, if it's okay with you, I'm just going to dive in. If that's all right. You haven't really got a choice.
Yes, try and sidestep the more sordid purchases.
Yes, well, I'm already hot under the collar because it's approximately 42 degrees in this room.
It's unbearable, isn't it?
I know. It's a problem because when you're podcasting, everyone gets very low energy.
So, is fizzy water okay? I've got fizzy water here.
And what are you suggesting that if it was still water, there wouldn't be a fizz on the audio? So is that what you mean?
I've owned the bottle. We could. I've only got fizzy. Can you wait for a couple of hours?
Just give it a shake. That usually takes all the fizz out of it. Okay, so here we go. We're going back to 2008, Clint. That's where this begins. Okay,
is that when I joined?
Well, it must be. Yeah, those are your earliest orders. How old were you in 2008 and where were you at that stage in your life?
2008, I was 37.
In 2008? No, you're thinking, what? How old?
Oh, no, yeah.
Are you? 20. Jesus. What's in the fizzy water? So 2008.
I told you I'm hungover.
I thought you were young. Oh,
you're only going to get two of the four syllables.
We've basically put Clint in a sauna mid-hangover. So this is going to be a very interesting subplot to the episode.
This is so difficult.
So 2008. Come on, how old were you? 2008. That's not difficult.
12.
12. Okay, right. So you were 12 years old. And no, you weren't. Go on.
27,
right, thank you. And you bought in, what have we got here? June 2008, a gift order, Witch Blood by Anya Bast and John Pilger in the Name of Justice. Two books. Do you want to tell us? I mean, Witch Blood looks pretty cool, looks slightly sort of erotic sci-fi. if that's a
thing. What?
Looks like erotic sci-fi. I don't know if that is a thing, but, you know, like hardcore sci-fi.
Oh, I don't know why the gift purchase is on it.
Oh, right, okay. it was for you then. Well, you should always add gift order because sometimes it's free. And that way you get a little present for yourself.
Do you?
Yeah, you can add gift order. Actually, no. I think you've got to pay £2 or £3 for a bit of wrapping paper, but you know.
That seems a bit bleak if you're buying it for yourself.
It's a little bit Mr. Bean writing his own card at his birthday, yeah. Isn't it, in the restaurant?
I think that's... Yeah, if I remember, that's that sort of a weird witch erotica book was for my sister. Why I'm buying erotica for my sister, I have no idea. I mean, it's something she's obviously asked for.
It's just a great starting point. You know what I mean? If we were sitting down for dinner now, Clint, strangers, right? And the first thing you said was, I once bought witch erotica for my sister.
I didn't say once. So, I think you'll find as you go on, there's a lot of... It's a lot more of them.
Witch erotica. So, so tell us how does witch erotica work? What is it? Is it?
Well, witch erotica is a group of independent testers who don't take their money from advertising, and they will test erotica and give ratings. Oh, this is the other kind of witch, isn't it?
Witch erotica.
It's the best buy.
Oh, God. Who do you trust to get your erotica from? Well, there isn't Trustpilot for erotica, so you use witch erotica, and then you get reviews from users. Well, I found witch blood to be highly stimulating. Tell us about witch blood.
Oh, I didn't fucking read it, did I?
Oh, okay, fine.
I did what my mum used to do whenever I asked for a book growing up. She'd just go, there you go. And I go, Did you read the back of it, mother? Do you know anything? Do you want to talk about it later when I finish it? She's like, no interest. And she was like, I was asking for things like Goethe, the Sorrows of Young Werther, about a young man who's like lost in life and ends up committing suicide by 21. She was giving me all these books and just not looking at the back of them.
I can tell you what it's about. Turning her back on the coven after her sister is killed by a demon. Oh, that's already arousing for me. Isabel Novak, a water witch. Turns her turns her rage and sorrow into power, and determined to destroy the warlock she holds responsible for the tragedy, forms an uneasy alliance with an earth witch. Wow, water witches and earth witches getting together. One of the signs of the apocalypse.
You just get a muddy witch.
Exactly. A muddy witch who stirs within her a deep desire. Oh, there's a deep desire happening here. Look, someone's given a bad review. Jay Turner, don't ever, ever, ever read another Anya Bast book. This was a waste of an hour of my life. Well done for sticking at it, Jay Turner. That's 60 minutes of my life I won't get back. Listen, mate, don't try and do an English degree. Jesus. This was a waste of an hour of my life that I'll never get back. Truly terrible in just about every way. The characters are all hot. I know how they feel, frankly. And go at it like rabid rabbits. But the sex is all slot A into tab B stuff, which actually makes it rather dull. Oh, yeah, the characters are all hot too and dress in leather or rubber whilst calling up magical forces.
Dear God.
Oh, come on. Dressed in leather or rubber calling up magical forces. It's like Harry Grotter. This is... Frankly, the muscle band studs left me cold. They were so one-dimensional. God forbid, I'm not going to give up on this review. God forbid that a male character should actually exercise the muscle at the other end of his body. Woof, woof. I added that woof, woof.
All right. It's better with the woof, woof.
No, that was not author's own. Not even a bonk fest, just a blah fest. Or to use the correct term, wall banger. Clint, your thoughts?
Why? Just look at porn.
No, but maybe you want to get involved and sort of indulge in a more, you know, compelling fictional world. Anyway, Clint, you're straight off the bat, you're buying porn for your sister. What's John Pilcher in the Name of Justice? What's that about?
Oh, that's an easier wank. It's a collection of documentaries about various human rights abuses around the world.
Great.
I'd sort of gone right off John Pilcher. I never really liked him, but I find him humorless.
What is a John Pilcher, please?
John Pilcher was a journalist, or still is a journalist. He's 1939, I believe he was born.
All right.
And he used to write for The Mirror back in the 70s when it was more of a left-wing sort of radical publication. Mm. And then went on and did a bunch of books and documentaries. And I think, I can't remember, but I think that one you're looking at is like subtitled something like Documentaries That Changed the World, which is a very modest title. But very cool. But yeah, he's often put in the same category as people like Chomsky and Robert Fisk and Finkelstein and people like that. But unlike all those, and Howard Zinn, but someone like Howard Zinn, reading him is a joy because he's funny and he's got a sense of humor, but Pilcher is humorless.
I tried to read Robert Fisk and that was very hard.
Oh, which one?
The massive one that came out about 2000, just after 9/11, so 2002 or 3.
Civilization, yeah.
Yeah,
that's good.
I know, but it's quite dry. You've really got to concentrate, Clint. You've got to concentrate. And, you know, I'm sorry, Robert Fisk, I'm trying to read about civilization and the wars between the religious and racial cultures around the world, but I'm just a bit distracted. Just can't quite commit. That's the problem. Anyway, this is a DVD, John Pilger in the Name of Justice. So
I did. I heard a lovely little bit of gossip about Pilger when I was at a party once, and I was talking to an ex-girlfriend of his who also worked in the Mirror in the 70s. And she told me that, you know, for all his sort of documentaries on, you know, human rights abuses and things like that, that there one time the you know, in the 70s they'd have to evacuate quite a lot because IRA scares of bombs and things. So one time that they were, the fire alarms went off and they were evacuating, and Pilger bolted down the stairs when everyone else was trying to get out as well. And she said a main memory of that was he had very sharp elbows.
No, really?
Yeah.
That's like Avalanche, isn't it, that movie?
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's fantastic. They just did an American remake of it. It was originally, I believe, a French movie. Someone's going to correct me on that if I'm wrong. But they did a remake with Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It's a great concept where there's a family on a skiing holiday and an avalanche begins at the top of the mountain. And as it gets closer, everyone sitting on this balcony on this restaurant realizes they're in danger. And the dad, played by Will Ferrell in the remake, grabs his phone and runs. and as it is, the avalanche doesn't quite get to them and they're all fine. But the wife clocks that he's done that. And it's the fallout of that, essentially.
It's on a 3-year contract.
Yeah.
His marriage hasn't got 3 years left. Come on.
Yeah, I didn't renew my insurance. For God's sake, I've got to get the phone before I get the kids. So John Pilger's got sharp elbows. You see, already we've got some sizzling headlines to grab from this episode, Clint. Look at the gold you give me. Did I ever tell you my dad was on the IRA hit list?
No.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, so my dad used to work for the CBI, the Confederation of British Industry, kind of the employers' union, essentially. You know, the good guys. And my father sadly passed away years and years and years ago, but I've got lots of DVDs of him on things like Newsnight and Breakfast TV. And if anyone is of an age and they remember a man with terrible buck teeth, my dad had the worst teeth in history, on Breakfast News in the 80s and early 90s. That's my dad. Usually talking about the employers saying how, you know, rights for workers was going to cost business. And also things like there'll be a talent drain and all the talented people will leave. You know, that sort of, all those sort of slightly right of center. I'm being generous there. Those right wing clarion calls. Don't fuck the workers. We've got to think about the people who create the wealth, all about the wealth creators. Anyway, the IRA took a disliking to the CBI, who my dad worked for. And the police or the whoever it was, MI5s or 6s, found a list of potential targets and my dad was on it. So my dad lived in London and I was growing up in South Wales, living with my mum, and my dad would come back on weekends and stuff. So we're sitting in South Wales in a very small, rather idyllic market town one day. My brothers had left to go to university, knock on the door and the police arrived. Oh, hello there, proper Welsh policeman. I've just come to inform you that Richard Price, your father, your husband, Mrs. Price, he's on it. We found some evidence. He may be on a list. He may be on a target for the IRA. Okay, have a good day. Thanks, then. Just left. With us sitting going, the fuck?
We all had a laugh about it at the station because there's a price on his head and the man's name... It's Richard Price. Oh, we did have a laugh.
We really did. So, you know, you've made our day, if that's any help. And my mother as well, you know, Clint, because we're quite old friends now, but my mum drives my mum has cerebral palsy and she drives a mobility scooter. And this is the early 90s when those were still quite new, rare things. And it was a big truck that she used to drive, a battery-powered vehicle. And I would frequently find her looking under the mobility scooter to check for any devices. True story. I mean, as an image, it's pretty good, right? Just
did you have like the mirror on a stick?
No, we didn't go for the full mirror on a stick, but occasionally I was tempted to get an ice cream carton and stick it underneath and just see what she did, but I decided not to.
She needed a mobility scooter, but then also you kept catching her looking under it for devices.
Yeah. I know. Hang on a second. If you can get down like that, surely you can walk into town. No, I don't think she had it. She didn't have a particularly good look under. She sort of glanced underneath. She'd sit on it. That's what she'd do. She'd sit on it and then slide herself off. Do you know what I mean? Like peer over and have a look underneath.
Right. Yeah. I'm like
nothing,
that. Yeah.
Nothing now. I'm like that. Yes. What I
did. I didn't know your dad was targeted.
Yeah, targeted is probably an oversell, to be honest. He was on a list. I just imagine it was a very long list. I mean, the list probably just said all people who have right-wing opinions or who are conservative supporters. You know what I mean? It was probably one of those lists. It was a kind of...
Yeah.
It was atting everybody on Twitter, basically. All right.
When they're looking through your shopping history and they don't understand it, you have been bought red-handed.
Let's move on. Sorry, I've been a bit of a diversion there. Clint Edwards, we're talking
to
you. Well, we're talking to you about your life. That's the point of this podcast. 2009, September 2009, Gloucester, I know, Blues, Essential Blues Anthology at Karen Dalton. It's so hard to tell who's going to love you the best. The best of Bobby Blue Bland. 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 And Highwayman Collection by the Highwaymen. Now that, Johnny Cash et al, we had that on Matt Ford's episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. So a lot of music here, Clint. Which one would you like to defend first?
They're all good.
Yeah, of course.
What year was that?
2000.
There must have been a track on it.
Okay.
Because I've had blues albums for decades. So since I was a teenager. So... It must have just been cheap, and there was a couple of tracks on it that I wanted. That's the thing about blues albums, they're very cheap.
Well, £2.98, is that often because the copyrights expired?
Yeah. Yes, all the people on it are poor and being exploited.
Oh, God. There's a read on blues music.
Louis Armstrong, one of the greatest musicians ever lived, never made a penny of any of his major studio albums.
You're joking.
Yeah, that's why I had to keep doing live performances, but never made a penny.
Wow. Fuck.
There's a good documentary called 20 Feet from Stardom that I think it's still on Netflix or something, and it looks at all the backing singers of people like Stones and Bowie and how they were treated by the industry, which is not very well. And Phil Spector, who...
a man of absolutely no ill repute at all.
Yeah, a man who literally shot someone in the face.
God, sorry, I should not laugh at that. It's just, it's quite a turn of phrase. Yes, he really did, yeah.
He really did. And then turned up to the court case in a huge wig.
That was so weird.
This would distract him from my murderous antics.
Put the hive on. Yeah.
He would get all these brilliant singers like Darlene Love and that to record these tracks. And then just go and get sort of teeny boppers to go up and mime them and never paid them. In fact, Darlene Love was working as a cleaner and she said she was cleaning someone's house and they had the radio playing. She was like, hang on a minute, that's me. And then... So I won't spoil the end, but watch the documentary. It's really good.
Wow, fuck. Fuck, it's mad, isn't it? There was someone who... Because you know my hometown was near Rockfield, the recording studios. And stuff was recorded there. Loads of people recorded there, Queen and all this sort of stuff. And there's a big documentary that just came out about it. But one of the probably lesser well-reputed bands was the Happy Mondays. So I think it was Black Grape, actually. And they did... One of the guys I knew in Monmouth was a session musician with a harmonica. And he wrote the riff. Yeah. For 80 quid he got for his day.
I bet he's raking in.
Yeah. No, 80 quid for his day. Yeah. 80 quid for his day fee.
Right. So he didn't get any of the PRS.
No PRS at all. Remember that, Clint. If you've got your harmonica, make sure you bring a lawyer with it. That's the important lesson. All right. So you enjoyed the blues. Also, Highwayman Collection. We've poured over this before on My Mate Bought a Toaster. And the reason Matt Ford bought it, right, is because there's just one really good song on it. The first song he loved. Can you defend more than that, or are you not prepared to do that at this stage?
I'm sure the rest of the CD stayed on, but I can't remember. I can't remember the other tracks on there.
Okay, well...
Who's on it? Chris Christopherson?
You've got your Johnny Cash, your Willie Nelson, your Waylon Jennings, and your Chris Christopherson, or Chris, as his friends called him.
There you go.
It's...
Four alcoholic yeah. Country guys who are terrible to their wives.
Yeah. Together at last.
Together at last.
Guys, you should really be talking to each other, not singing. The first review sums this up. I bought this solely for the song Highwayman, as it was cheap. There we are.
There you go.
The benefit of art on Amazon. All right, let's move on, shall we, Clint Edwards? Let's dive on forwards now. 2012, we've got a classic DeLonghi DEM10 Compact Dehumidifier.
That's one of the best things I've ever bought.
No, because I was about to begin a rant that those things never work. Tell me more.
Mate, it is game changer.
Go on.
If you have damp, get a dehumidifier. If you have, when I was at uni, I had leak coming through my ceiling that my, you know, like, all, why are all landlords shit? Mm. So they'll come around and go, it'll be all right during the summer. It's like, yeah, but it's February now. so I had to, we could paint over it. That's not going to solve it, is it? How did you become a landlord? So, but it got onto my books, and the new books get damp. And if you get, and some of my books had book lice.
Your books had book
very
lice?
Distressing. Yeah, at uni. Oh, it's heartbreaking.
Oh God, did you lose some much loved books to book lice?
I threw out hundreds of books, but then I found out. Then I thought maybe Google the problem, and there's an easier solution.
What? Oh shit! But you don't need to burn the books. Maybe that's what the Nazis were doing. They were just book lice. Oh God, if only they'd known. What is the solution to book lice?
39 to 45 would have been so much better if it was a
God
dehumidifier in Berlin.
Come on, DeLonghi, where were you?
But if you get a dehumidifier, yeah. And so then this is my gift to the world. If anyone is have a problem with a tiny, tiny little, like the size of a pinhead, I thought I was going mad because I was telling people about it and they were like, oh, I've never seen these things.
Yeah.
But you also quite often get them in kitchen. But anyway, damp environments. You get them in cupboards because people have their kettle under the cupboard with steam coming up and that sort of thing. But if you bring the humidity of the room below 50%, they will desiccate.
Oh, really?
Pricks. Yeah.
So if you want to go to war with book lice, then you need to get a DeLonghi dehumidifier. That's a strap line for this episode. Might use that as the trail, mate. Might use that as a trail. If you ever want to hook people into My Mate Bought a Toaster. I can't imagine, because Clint, something which I should share this with the listeners, something that you and I share is you know, we've talked about witch porn. Obviously, we're both keen on witch porn, but we really fetishize books in the same way. I know you have the same problem that I do. I mean, my to-be-read pile is about the same height as me at the moment, and it's a problem.
Oh, God. Yeah, constantly. And it's forever growing. I've got books on the way. Yeah. But it's so nice, isn't it? Pick them up, hold them, sniff them.
The smell of books. I can't, you know, and do you have the same thing that I have? I wonder where I just feel like for example, we were working on a thing together one day and we had a lunch break and there was an Oxfam bookshop and we both went in and just browsed and bought stuff. And we both done shows at Hay on Wye together as well, at the Hay Festival. And when you're there surrounded by those bookshops, I just want everyone else to go away so I can lose myself for hours, and not just for 20 minutes, like, for weeks. What I want to do is buy the books, and I really, really mean this. I want everyone in my life to fuck off so I can just sit by myself and be a book hermit. And I've never managed to do that, right, obviously. But I wonder at what point I go, actually, you can come back in now. I think it would be weeks.
Have you been getting much more reading done in lockdown?
I had a very successful stint at the beginning. Beth and I were dividing the labour of the children very neatly, and I had these three-hour chunks at the beginning of every day, and I read a massive pile, and it was very, very satisfying indeed. And I felt much happier. I was a much happier human.
I was hearing people going, you know, like 2 or 3 weeks into lockdown, going, I'm bored, I don't know what to do. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is your chance to read all those books that you've been buying and storing up.
Yes. Yes, I know. And people saying, oh, I don't really like reading. And you're like, well.
I worked at a bank for 18 months and it was hell. And I won't say which bank it was, but put it this way. Is he looking at the posters on the way in? It was the only time I ever felt like punching a horse. on my lunch break, I was sat reading a book. And this girl sat next to me. I don't know, she's probably about 19 or whatever. And she's just flicking through her phone. And she just looked at me and goes, how can you even be bothered to read?
Wow. Did you have a response?
I can't remember what I said, but it might have been something pointing out that she'd literally just been reading Facebook on her phone.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the Bill Hicks moment, isn't it? What you reading for? What you reading for? So we do share a slightly I call it an illness, obsession,
fetishistic,
but also you ended up working not in a bank but in a,
what would be a nice word for us, readophiles. Okay. Something not contentious. Are we going to get on board with?
Yeah, and if we have a book club, maybe we could be a ring of readophiles. That'd be fun. We want to tonight. Hanging out my ring of readophiles should be fine.
driving pretty, baby, don't walk out that back door.
Hi there, I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries, and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
Toasty, toasty nuts, toastiness, toastiness, toastiness.
Tell us about working in the where you didn't work in a bank for long. You then worked in a
worked in a bank, worked in a library.
Right. So now, when you were surrounded by books in the library, did it very quickly become work, or did you still have the weird fetishization of them?
Yeah. I still liked. I liked them when they came in, but then once the public gets their little mitts on them, they get fucked up fairly quick.
Mm.
And also, we'd have. I think libraries are super important, of course, people access points, but they're also access points for a lot of people who, well, they don't have a lot of money and they come in to use the computers. And some people use it as a hangout or to do drug deals and things. So it was a good mix of people in there.
Wow.
Not all of them were respectful of books. So
did you try and explain the Dowie Decimal System to the drug dealers? Or
no, we didn't even use that. It was just the alphabet.
Oh, yeah. I know that one.
Yeah, we did. We had someone borrow Nigella Lawson's cookbook.
Right.
I thought, that's strange because he doesn't strike me as a chef-like person.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought it out without the cover.
Ah.
He brought it back without the cover. So,
So hang on. So what's the implication there? What's he done with it?
He wanked over it.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, he was a known perv. He was checking out. I was like, you're not going to, I mean, there's one ingredient you're going to add that is not listed.
That is too much seasoning. That is too much seasoning. Okay. All right. Get the dehumidifier for the, that will get rid of book lice. So that is. Okay. Let's move on from the dehumidifier. 2013 now.
Just popped back to my mind. When I would get books, when people would bring books back to the library, quite often you'd be checking them in and you'd open them up and there'd be left in the book a single sheet of toilet paper used as a bookmark.
Oh,
that's nice.
That's nice, isn't it? It's nice. Nice to feel close to people like that. Now, also in 2012, actually, I don't want to go into 2013 just yet because this is quite interesting. But on the 8th of March 2012, it's a pretty terrifying image. I mean, it only costs £6.15. It's the Draper 560 gram hand axe with a steel shaft. I mean, that's a weapon. That's a proper weapon, Clinty.
What is it? An axe?
Yeah, you bought an axe, mate. I mean, what? Who was upsetting you? You bought a fucking axe.
I have no recollection of buying an axe. That's worrying,
I'm sorry,
isn't it?
You don't buy an axe and forget that you bought an axe.
I don't have an axe now.
Right.
I did for a while, because I've moved house quite a lot in the last few years, and you just leave stuff in your car boot. I realised I was driving around for about a year with an axe in my boot. It's like that.
Sure, you can search the car, officer. It's absolutely fine. Axe and gaffer tape, nothing to see here. So you don't? Did you know why you bought the axe?
No. I think it's for my. It was for my brother-in-law. He was because they just got a log burner. That would be it.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
But that's a hand axe. That would be for him. Whereas it was the full length axe in my boot.
You had a full length with the long shaft.
Yeah,
in your
boot. About a year.
But what did you buy it for? Is it just for log cutting? Right. Let's just assume it's log cutting.
Yeah. It's for log cutting. Yeah. Let's say that.
I find log cutting incredibly therapeutic.
Oh, when you hit it, bang on it splits. So satisfying.
That power. I'm conquesting a tree. You know what I mean? I am beating a tree with my own sheer brute strength. And yet what the tree doesn't know is it doesn't take that much strength because you've just got to catch the point. It's so satisfying.
Let the axe do the work.
Let the axe do the work. Yeah, exactly. Okay, good. All right, so Clint's got a thing for axes. That's fine. Let's skip on ahead now. Let's see where we're going now. 2013, you've got a green laser pointer. Nice. Anyway, oh, nice. £6.77. That's in the old the pen style laser pointer. I mean, in 2013, that was basically what we used instead of Twitter, isn't it?
That was, yes, that was the summer of trying to bring down as many planes as you can. what was that? A laser pointer.
A laser pointer. Wait, I mean, they're famous for tormenting cats, aren't they?
Yes, that's probably what it was for. Yeah, my cats playing with them. Right. Oh, also I used it in, I did the Bad Film Club, Nico and Joe, where you sit in a cinema and you watch a film and then you go, look at that. And then it's good to use a laser pointer to point at something amusing.
Very useful. Make sure you use it in Bad Film Club when you are performing alongside the film. Don't just use it at your local multiplex on the weekend.
Well, we did one gig in Edinburgh one year, and this guy who just come in the back and sat in the dark, obviously drunk, middle of the afternoon.
Yeah,
didn't know it was a show with people mic'd up talking.
It was just a movie. He was just coming for a quiet movie.
He just thought, oh, Die Hard 2 in the middle of the afternoon. Why not? And then after a few jokes and us pointing things out on the screen, he just went, whoever's talking over the film should shut the fuck up. Such a good Edinburgh review.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, those laser pointers are... They're an interesting one, aren't they? Because you can use them for a lot of things. You can terrify children with the whole red dot thing. You can sort out any myopia you've got as well. Just shave a few millimeters off your eyeballs. They've got a lot of uses, but tormenting the cat does seem to be the go-to use for them.
Yeah, that's probably why you should never take a cat to a TED talk.
Yeah. Never take a cat to a nuts. TED talk. Can you imagine?
As my grandma always said.
So, hi guys. In the summer of 2007, I had this idea for a business. Get away! Okay, 2015, Clint, you bought one of my favourite things ever, the complete Calvin and Hobbes. If there is such thing as a happy place in my mind, I have it in the form of Calvin and Hobbes. Please tell us why you love them so much.
Oh, ever since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Was it the Express newspaper, I think?
Yes, that was interesting, isn't it? It came in a party. It was definitely the Express, because that's where I read it, because my mum took the Express. Odd that such a far-right rag should be pumping out, dog-whistling such beautiful liberal sentiment.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just slipping under the radar all the time. Yeah, I'd absolutely love Calvin and Hobbes, and I've got like all the books individually anyway, but I thought, yeah, I just want to get the collection. Yeah. I actually saw last year, I went to the Billy Island Museum in Ohio and saw some original Bill Watterson, Calvin and Hobbes. I did a little sort of snoop around backstage.
Oh, really? Like,
backstage, whatever the behind of a museum is. But I had this tour, and they pulled out some original Peanuts, some original Little Nemo, Charles Adams, you know, did all the Adams Family stuff, and yeah. Bill Watson. It was great seeing the originals. Amazing.
Oh, so cool. So cool. What you can
actually... Heartwarming as well. It's like reading P.G. Woodhouse. You finish a book and you just think, oh, the world is a nicer place.
It's a nicer place. And if you've never read any Calvin and Hobbes, it's the story of this little boy and his best friend, who happens to be a tiger. It's a toy tiger. And occasionally we see him from in a sort of, you know, in a movie, maybe in Fight Club or something, when you suddenly see the character talk, you know what I mean? And they're talking to Brad Pitt.
I can't believe you just compared it in Fight Club, but it works.
Because Brad Pitt isn't there, because actually it turns out in Calvin and Hobbes, he is just a fluffy toy. But in that's the sort of entrance for this thing. You have to understand that the adults see the fluffy toy. And that's what Bill Watson does so well, is the pullback and reveal. He will do a, you know, 8 or 9 stills of this intergalactic thing where Calvin is a superhero flying a spaceship, yeah, and the tiger's with him in it.
Spaceman Spiff.
Yeah, Spaceman Spiff! Yeah, and you're with him, and it's such a great story. And then there's that cut at the end, that last sequence, that last picture when he's on the floor next to his mum, who's fed up with him, and the tiger's just this, you know, just an old toy. And it's childhood, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Bill Watson studied philosophy, and I think there's a lot of that in there, where you get that oh God, what would, I suppose a Jungian thing would be interpenetration of opposites, where
oh please come on,
you
tell
get
me more.
Like what your voice there went like, what's that AMSR?
Oh,
is it AMSR?
Independent, yeah. ASMR, the cameras. What?
that's the one.
Mm-hmm. ASMR is the sexual fetishization of noises. Like,
yeah, that's your voice went all like that.
Well, just tell me more about interpenetration, please.
I knew I shouldn't have said it.
Come on.
No. No, like what you were saying about how it would be like two different worlds crashing into each other, and it's that moment when one collides into the other that it's that has is just a beautiful thing.
It's so gorgeous. I love them so much, and it's making me want to go and actually. Do you know what?
They're also, it's just piss yourself funny. Like, yeah, it'll be like a three or like a four panel cartoon, and it would be Calvin waking up in the middle of the night, Calvin climbing out of his window. The next panel will be his mum and dad in bed with the phone ringing, and then the last panel is just Calvin in the dead of night somewhere at a call box going, "Hi, Dad, guess where I am?"
Yeah, it's adventure and it's stupidity and it's it being in the moment and it's oh god, I could talk about it for hours. And you know what I've realised, Clint, because I loved Calvin Hobbes from reading them at my brother's house, my much older brother, 10 years older than me, set up home, obviously, when I was still a kid. And I would go and stay with them and they had them all. So I'd often be sleeping on their sofa bed reading them. And it occurs to me, Clinty, that I don't have any Calvin and Hobbes in my house. So I know, genuinely. So I think I might actually get this. And it's such an important part of my life because honestly, you say the comedy thing. I really believe when I was 10, 11, 12, the thing that got me laughing, I'd read a lot of Beano and Dandy and I'd been really into all that.
Yeah.
But this is the thing that began my journey, the slippery slope towards doing comedy was the joy of Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
So I'm
whereas I also enjoyed Beano and Dandy as a kid, Calvin and Hobbes felt much more closer to real life because it resonated more. Like there's one sketch where Calvin hides a snowball in the freezer for 6 months to throw it at Susie in the middle of summer.
I remember that one.
And,
yes.
And I did that as a kid. I've got a sister. My mum's got a freezer and there's snow outside. So I made a snowball, put it in a sandwich bag, hid it in the back of the freezer. And obviously completely forgot about it. But then I was ratting around in there one day in the middle of summer looking for a ice lolly or something and found it. I was like, oh, yeah, Vicky's in the garden. So I thought, this is going to be the funniest thing. So I threw it at her. And I'd like to say I hadn't noticed the density, the change in the fluffy snowball over 6 months. But I think I had, and I just chose to ignore it. Yeah, hit a square in the back, and she went down like a sack of shit. I took my sister. It's probably why I'm buying all the erotica as an apology. My excuse was because she yelped. Mum came running out and went, "What the hell's going on out here?" And I went, "Well, I don't know." And there's just my sister on the ground next to, inexplicably, a snowball lump of ice next to her. And my dad, before I could even then confess, he went, "Probably fell off an aeroplane."
Good, good.
Fell off an aeroplane.
It fell off the back of an aeroplane. Do you know what I'm doing now? For the first ever time on My Mate Bought a Toaster, I've never done this before. I'm about to buy the hardback complete Calvin and Hobbes.
Woo!
You don't know how much it is, bloody hell. I'm just going to click on that and forget about it.
How much is it? I bought it, it was a reasonable price.
Yeah, £45. Yeah, it's the complete hardback is £100, but I need it to be in my house. It just needs to be there because my kids are starting to tune into it, and that's they're starting to tune into it.
Oh, you're going for the hardback one?
Yeah, it's an important book. It needs to be in my life. It's one of those things. I've just got to have it. Just got to have it. I've done it. I've just spent £100 on Calvin and Hobbes. That is not what I expected to happen. I mean, that is literally, to make it clear, that is literally, I reckon that's about how much I earn a month from doing My Mate Bought a Toaster. So I've just spunked it on Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh my God. I've done it again.
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
I need a kickback from Amazon. If it weren't for my Amazon, Bezos would be on Universal Credit and I'd be on the front of Forbes.
Yeah.
I spent... It's essentially wealth redistribution just between two men. And what I've done now is I've got you to give him another 100 quid.
I know. Well, that's it, isn't it? Imagine how much he's getting of that. Anyway, let's not dwell on that. All right, let's move on. Clint Edwards joining me on My Mate Bought a Toaster. We're crashing on into 2018 now, Clint. Once more, there's a dark undercurrent, if I can say that, to various things you buy. For example, the £14.95 on the Roughneck Gorilla Crowbar. Huh? And at the same time, in the same order, the Powaka 3D Skull Ice Cube Tray Mold. Some sort of ritual or what?
Sounds like a good night in.
Yeah, in someone else's house with that crowbar.
The crowbar is amazing because I smashed the shit out of my sister's shed.
So that's what you're doing. You were destroying her shed for her.
It was a shed and a chicken coop. They had a big chicken coop and they were moving house and they needed to break this thing down. So me and my brother-in-law, Adam, and he goes, I've got a couple of crowbars and we were both all drunk. And then we just went at this chicken coop. It was a big one, like a walk-in side. Had loads of chickens. We let them out first.
Good, thank you. And, yes, I was waiting for that bit.
God, it was so satisfying. It was so satisfying.
Smashing stuff up is amazing.
Then afterwards, I was like, I must have a crowbar in my life. So I bought one.
Oh, hang on. So this crowbar was not purchased in order to facilitate smashing the chicken shed?
No, smashing the chicken shed was so much fun. I was like, I'm going to buy a crowbar and smash anything I get the opportunity of.
Wow. You just loved it. So I need to have a crowbar. But Clint, you don't have anything to smash. There'll be something.
I was going to put it in the boot, but I've already got an axe in there.
Pop it next to the axe. What about the ice cubes, which are skull themed ice cubes? Any excuse for this?
They are great. I thought they were going to be a bit naff, but they're like a little silicone mold, and then you fill them up with water, very much like a normal ice cube, and they come out proper little 3D skulls.
Yeah.
So you get to enjoy your gin and tonic and a little, you know, memento mori there,
and crunch a skull at the end.
Crunch a skull, yeah.
Fantastic. This is fantastic. And also, I can see what you've been enjoying those with. Johnny Walker Black Label Blended Scotch Whiskey. £17.49 there.
Oh, that's a good price, isn't it?
Probably got, well, this is 2018, actually, in a couple of years ago. Oh, also, we got some Marigold multi-purpose disposable gloves. Now, are you a fan of a glove, Clint?
I think you might find a lot of those gloves. Mm-hmm. I think there might be a lot of glove purchases. Yeah, I love a glove. Bloody love a glove.
Any reason why, or just a fan of not touching things?
Big fan of not touching things. Well, I have OCD, I have contamination OCD, so gloves are a quick way of slowing down how many times I wash my hands in a day. It's been sort of like 50, then if you wear gloves, it's a lot quicker. Also, it's good for, feed wild animals, so it's good for cleaning out their little water bowls and food trays and stuff.
You feed wild animals? Are they only wild because someone smashed their shed up?
Yeah, they're livid. it's six livid chickens.
Six livid chickens looking for their shed. Along came Clint. Made sure they were dead. So the OCD thing. Now, I've known you for years and years, and I know about this. And I'm not going to make light of it. It's not particularly funny, but I am thrilled for you because lockdown and Corona must be like the dream for you. This is your Olympics.
This is my Olympics, of course. In fact, having contamination OCD, it was sort of like having a superpower when Corona hit, because everyone's freaking out going, oh God, there's germs everywhere.
Yeah.
What do you do? And I'm like, well, this is how I function day to day anyway. So I'm like, you know, my girlfriend's worried about going to the supermarket or just leaving the house full stop. And I'm there with my, you know, I've been like stocking anti-vax soap and gloves since my traumatic childhood.
It's the happiest I've known you in years, Clint. I'm so happy for you.
So everything in there. Do you remember it was a Dettol advert years ago? And it was a very clever advert because you could see exactly what they were doing, which was sort of manipulation. And it was, but it's sort of how people with contamination OCD see everything all the time. And the advert was someone touching a raw chicken and then going around the kitchen touching other things.
Yeah.
And wherever they touch would like light up Blue. Do you remember that advert?
Yeah, I do absolutely remember that advert. And they've now used that for real with Corona, haven't they? They've got a luminescent paint, and they've set up an experimental gig in China,
I think it was.
Yeah, right. And they put a little bit of Corona, i.e. this luminescent paint that only shows up on UV. They put a bit on a door handle, let everyone have a lovely night, and at the end put the UV light on and went, holy fuck. And basically they jumped into Clint's head.
Yeah. Exactly. So then, in March or whenever it was, when everyone started going, oh God, I'm going to have to think about what I'm touching, because I've already got a brain that looks at everything like that all the time, which is incredibly debilitating. It slows everything down, but it was suddenly, it's like a little superpower. I was like, oh, I know how to deal with this. This is the world that I've always expected.
The world's come to you, finally. Yeah. But do you have ways of dealing with it? Do you have ways of making it better, or do you just live with it?
Yeah, I'm going through things. There's like meeting at the Priory once a month, and well, I haven't seen them for ages. But
is there really?
Yeah,
are you really doing that?
I can never
tell whether you're joking or not, Clinty.
I did go there, and yeah, it's fine. I didn't really get much out of it because you can get those sort of things in books anyway. Because when I was at the library, there's a series of books that are actually prescribed to people called Overcoming. So it's pretty much you just work through that.
Yeah, but hang on. The worst possible way of delivering therapy for people with OCD, especially about contamination, is giving them a fucking library book.
Exactly. Get it on the Kindle.
Get out of the Kindle, thanks. That's interesting about the Priory, though, because I've been to various.
That's why I've ruined so many books, because I've cleaned them.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you lost the job at the library.
And I had a George Orwell book the other day come through the post, and I just looked at it, and it's one of those, you know, those like when they have like a rough paper cover, and it's like a non-sealed cover. And I just looked at it and I went, well, that's going to be fucked. 5 minutes.
It's going to absorb all the empty back.
Gave it a wipe and it's wiped it, and then the cover's curling up and the book's going, I'm like, oh, sorry. Sorry, but you're living with me now.
So you can only be clean and wipe clean books. That's a very dark question to ask at a bookshop. Hello, have you got a wipe clean copy of Calvin and Hobbes?
Just love tigers.
All right, Clint, let's leave that image behind and we'll crash on now into lockdown, okay? Let's find out what's going on with you in 2020, okay? So we're going to have a little look through your lockdown now. There's more gloves. There's some Under Armour short shorts. And what I love is that you've obviously sent these back, right? And they've given you a refund, but I've never seen this message. This is really funny. So it's shorts, Under Armour shorts. You've sent them back. You've got a refund. It says, refunded. There's no need to return your item.
Free shorts. Have you never had that before?
What, the no need to return your item message?
Yeah.
No, I've never seen that before. No. Is that a Corona thing or is that just what they do?
No, because I bought a bunch of things and then clicked, as you know, because you've taken the mick out of me, when we've been in previous summers elsewhere and I've been wearing black jeans and I said, I don't own shorts. And then I thought this summer, I'm going to try shorts.
Oh my God. But do you even have shins? I can't even imagine seeing those.
Little pale goth Robert Smith shins. And so I ordered shorts, put them on, and I thought, these aren't me. So then I was like, I'm going to return these. And then they just went, yeah, don't send them back.
I love it. It's really funny. There's no
But they also said the same. I got a baseball cap because I'm having long hair.
Yeah.
And I went, baseball caps aren't me. So I clicked to return and they went, don't bother sending it back. A bunch of free stuff.
Mate, there's a load of, you got Alice bands here. You bought $7.99 on headbands. This is for your beautiful, long, flowing locks. Dude.
Thank you.
You've got the return window. Time to get some free Alice bands, I think. Unless it'd be really gutting if they went, you need to send these back. And you could just send them back covered in your black hair. Screw you guys.
Yeah, I need them.
Okay.
Never, right. Never even touched an Alice band before lockdown. Now I own, how many? How many's on there?
Eight.
There you go. You know, I need to get eight to find one that fits my massive head.
Have you got a Megabonds?
Huge.
Have you?
Yeah.
I've got such a Megabonds, right, that I didn't know this about you. This has been great, Clint. I feel like I've got to know you even better. I've got such a
Calvin
massive
Hobbes,
head.
Therapy, massive heads.
Yeah, IRA. We've done it all. We've ticked all the boxes.
IRA, exactly.
Classic podcasting. I went on a stag do to Latvia, ticking another box, and they went go-karting. It was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. Literally, you turn up and there are guys refueling the go-karts while smoking and using the go-karts as ashtrays. I mean, it was just fucking, this is mental. And we go into this basement to get our speech, the health and safety speech, which was here's a jacket, here's a helmet. That was literally the health and safety speech. What we're seeing there, we can hear rifle fire in the woods surrounding the go-kart track. Someone asked what it was. Turns out one of the other options you could do on the stag weekend was shoot cattle. It's awful, awful, awful place, right? Not Latvia's not an awful place. This particular spot was awful. So I'm sitting there and they all start trying on the helmets. And I go straight to the end, right? Straight to the end to get the biggest helmet. Not even slightly did it go on my head. The consternation amongst the team who were in charge of the go-kart circuit. They were like, well, they go and get the others. They're going to get their colleagues, not to find a helmet that fits me, but to point out the freak, right? And eventually one said, loads of Latvian being spoken, and he went off into this special corner and opened this hatch, like the proper kind of, we'll go to the freak corner for the extra, extra, extra large, and he gets this massive fucking helmet. And everyone's like, oh, because I was thrilled, because I'm like, great, I don't need to go go-karting.
Right, yeah, I can go and execute a cow instead.
Yeah, exactly. Fresh beef, get your fresh beef. So I'm standing, this is brilliant. The guy pulls the helmet out and my heart sank because I was like, oh shit, I'm going to have to put a helmet on and go go-karting with these pricks. None of whom I like very much anyway. And he comes up to me with the helmet, puts it on my head. Like I felt like I was being like some sort of coronation, right? Everyone's looking around. Everyone else has got their helmets on. Pops it on my head. Still didn't fit. Absolutely thrilled.
Oh my God.
Absolutely thrilled.
You outsized their biggest helmet.
I mean, this may not be true, but scientifically, I think it is. My head's bigger than Latvia. That's basically what I'm trying to tell you.
They've never had a Joseph Merrick like us.
Listen, to complete this lovely tour through your life, Clint Edwards, there's some excellent things in lockdown, which really sum you up, because you know there is a slight there's a gothic seam running through your life, and there's also an extremely well-read man who loves his book and his books and his literature.
I love my book.
He loves his book. His one book that's clean enough to read. You've got arriving still to come, actually, W.H. Auden Prose Volume 3.
Oh yes,
you're a fan of Auden.
Love Auden. Plunge your hands in water, plunge them up to the wrist, stare in the basement and wonder what you've missed.
I would kill with an axe if necessary to have the ability to grab lines from my head like you can. And you always do this.
I seem to remember being on a train with you a few years ago and we were quoting Philip Larkin.
Larkin's different. I can do a bit of Larkin. Also, who did Stop All the Clocks? Was that Auden?
Auden, yeah.
There you are, mate. Got that from Four Weddings. So up your bum, Clint. Stop All the Clocks. Cut off your phone, stop the dog from... There we are. So a bit of Auden in his life, but it's not just all about Auden, because also he's got one of the other great writers, obviously there's W.H. Auden, but also Don, Monty, the complete gardener, a practical, imaginative guide to every aspect of gardening. Now, you've bought that for your other half.
Is erotica. That is, I'm kicked out of the room. Any reading of that is being done. Monty Don and his bloody gardening.
So a bit of Monty Don. We love Monty Don. And did you see the episode recently where his dog died? Did you see that?
No.
Oh, geez.
But no. I can't deal with. Have you seen? I can't deal with anything. The death of an animal.
No.
Have you seen the that Futurama episode with? Oh God, what's his name? Fry has a dog called Seymour Butts.
Sure.
And the episode is called Jurassic Bark.
Yeah.
And it is unbearable to watch. It's beautiful and it's heartbreaking. Yeah. And it's an episode of Futurama and it's up there with I can't think of anything that's more poignant than that. Wow. Maybe that's just me showing how emotionally stunted I am.
No, Futurama when it hits is almost as good as Calvin and Hobbes. I think that's fair to say. No, it is. It's incredible. It's incredible. I think that one of the things that made me like you, Clint, was not only were you very funny,
cash,
very handsome, and you gave me money, and you wrote jokes for me on a radio show. But let's not get distracted by that. One of the things that makes me like you, Clint, is how much you love animals, and I've always noticed that about you. You really do love animals, but this passion that you've currently got for animals is taking it to a whole new level. We should complete the episode by sort of the most revealing thing about you. You've spent £70 on the upgraded wildlife camera, Wi-Fi Bluetooth, 20 megapixel. £70 that cost you. And tell us about your new friends, Clinty.
I'm going to have to try and work out a way to use that camera to also perform in front of, so it's a write-off. Yeah, that's for capturing my nocturnal friends. So I've got a fox who visits daily, Bartholomew, and five crows. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I want to try and... So sometimes in the morning, there'll be some disturbances of food in that I've left out. So I bought a camera, an infrared camera, to see how it goes on at night.
Yeah.
Should I go back to the Priory?
No, it's glorious, man. I love it. And I, you know, you do tweet about it, and it's brilliant. You've got your fox who comes to see you. You've got your gloves on, so it's all completely kosher.
Got my gloves
Everything's
on.
Fine. There's no, you know.
Come here, my children, and hug me wearing a hazmat suit.
Basically, you spend lockdown sitting in a garden talking to foxes and crows.
Yeah.
And if there is a better image to leave the wonderful Clint Edwards on, then I'm yet to find it. The man
mid-breakdown.
The man with an axe in his boot and a tame fox in his garden. Clint, you're wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing this this life of yours on My Mint Got a Toaster. I always end episodes with this. I want everyone to follow you on Twitter because they must, because you're brilliant and hilarious. What's your Twitter at? What's your Twitter at, please?
It is at... what is it? Clint.
No, it's not J. What is it? That's someone else.
Clint J. Edwards, which I only found out when I joined Twitter 10 years ago today. That's weird. I had a notification earlier.
Okay.
And I didn't know that my middle initial and my surname Edwards looks like Jedwards. So my Twitter handle is at Clint Jedwards. And I had loads of Jedwood people following me.
He's a massive fan. He's a massive fan of the Jedwood. You don't tweet enough about Jedwood, actually. That's my one criticism of you. Clint, thank you very much indeed for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster. Everyone go and follow Clint Jedwood at once. And we'll see you soon. Thanks, Clint. Bye.
Bye. Bye. I love
you,
girl, baby, and I
want you for the rest of my day. The very brilliant, very funny Clint Edwards. Do give him a follow on Twitter and say hi to him, because he's just glorious. He's one of the best stand-ups. He's an incredible MC. He would be my dream MC at a comedy club. He's brilliant. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I had a lot of fun. I'll be back next week with more My Mate Bought a Toaster. Take care.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Heavy Pencil.
An actor of my experience, you just get wrung dry.
A podcast sitcom with Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
I played Edmund Gelder, and he played Fanny Snatch.
The Observer called it a lovely thing. Wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
I'm not having any more of this. I need you to pull me off immediately.
Heavy Pencil from Great Big Owl.